Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today we open our show with an interview with Scott Dreyer, an attorney who is representing homeless people suing the cities of Santee and San Diego, the Sheriff's Department, and other agencies over alleged mistreatment of homeless people during sweeps. Then we'll tell you about a successful effort to keep several lakes in our inland region from closing, the unusual cause of a fire here in Rancho San Diego, and about a deadly rabbit disease confirmed in Jamul and Dulzura wild rabbits. On Destination East County, hear about all the 4th of July fireworks and festivities coming up in East County. We'll have some tips to beat the heat for pets, and we'll tell you where you can find cool zones in our region as the weather heats up. On Crime Beat, hear about an assault on a homeless man in a tent and a pursuit that ended with an attempted assault on police officers. Polling managers are needed for the upcoming election. El Cajon police seek your help to identify a pedestrian who was fatally struck. We have some grilling safety tips for you. Some good news about a partnership between Kumeyaay College and San Diego State University. And a tragic story about a baby in El Cajon who died after being left for 9 hours in a vehicle. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. And today, my very special guest is attorney Scott Dreyer. He is representing Hope for the Homeless Lakeside and 16 homeless plaintiffs that have filed a lawsuit against the cities of San Diego, Santee, the County of San Diego, Caltrans, and the California Highway Patrol over the treatment of the homeless. So, Scott, welcome to our show, and thanks so much for joining us on this important issue.
Well, thank you for having me, Miriam. I appreciate the chance to talk and hopefully push toward a good resolution.
Yeah, we'd all like to see that. So, for starters, tell us about Hope for the Homeless Lakeside, what that group is all about.
They are out there trying to make the lives of homeless people less miserable and really help them get out of homelessness, but have the things they need while they're trying to get out of that. So they provide opportunities and services and supplies.
Wonderful.
Yeah, they're beneficiaries. Yeah.
Very good. Yeah, Lakeside is, of course, in the unincorporated part of San Diego County. And as we all know, the county still does not have a single homeless shelter. The only real shelter in East County is in El Cajon. So, tell us about the lawsuit. I've read the press release, and I will say it was horrific. It focuses on these sweeps that they're doing to clear the homeless camps. But tell us about some of the really controversial things that were going on during these sweeps.
Right. And let me just ask you a quick aside. Did I send you the copy of the lawsuit itself?
I haven't read the whole thing, but I have an article in our site at eastcountymagazine.org. But I mean, when I saw things like them throwing away, you know, people's dentures and ashes of homeless deceased relatives, I think that's shocking. So give us a few more of those examples. This was all happening in sweeps in Lakeside specifically?
Yes, the areas of Lakeside and Santee. And as you mentioned, Lakeside's not an incorporated city with its sort
right.
of a...
And Santee is an incorporated city, but they do rely on sheriff for their law enforcement. So they're
So that brings in the county, and of course all the areas are over, you know, under the county. All of us are within the county.
Correct. And then the city of San Diego owns some property out there. So tell us what was going on during this homeless sweeps that prompted you to file this lawsuit.
Right. And it's not so much the sweeps, it's the way the sweeps were conducted. Everyone's got to have a place to sleep.
Right.
It seems to me what the philosophy was these areas, Santee, Lakeside, the areas within those sort of boundaries, they didn't want them there. The mayor of Santee said, they can go anywhere, they just can't be here. What we got was the notion that we got to get them out of here without having to take any steps to give them a place to go or be.
Yeah, and there's been a court ruling in the past that had found that cities could not do homeless sweep, or other entities could not do homeless sweeps unless they had a place for the people to stay. If someone was offered shelter space and declined it, then they can do a sweep with reasonable notice and reasonable procedures. I believe that same issue is eventually coming up before the Supreme Court. But at least for now, it's not legal to conduct
the
sweep.
That's the law, correct. Yeah, and the city of San Diego even reached a settlement and has been pretty good. And let me just say, none of us wants people living everywhere and we can't walk on the sidewalks and everything's blocked and,
right,
it's messed up. Nobody wants that. But at the same time, I guess what Lakeside and Santee decided to do was, we're not going to issue them a bunch of citations and go through that whole process. It's just get them away. And the way we get them away is go in, take their stuff, dump it, and that makes them leave. We don't want to stay here because they're going to dump our stuff. Or now you've dumped our stuff, we've got nothing, we'll have to go somewhere else. And
yeah,
so they seem
to
be.
Were they even giving notice, or are they just going in and doing this with no notice?
It's funny, they're purporting to give notice. But what we often found was they post notices with no dates or times, which you're supposed to at least give some notice to people. The city of San Diego does that. They give notice. You can argue whether sometimes it's reasonable or not, but they give notice. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the times the city of San Diego, if someone's not blocking a complete sidewalk, the city doesn't threaten or cite or arrest. It's just say, hey, come on, you got
to
move along.
And I've always wondered, when you're going to clear an encampment, while I understand they can't save everything, you know, they don't want to save lice-infested clothing, but some things are obvious. They threw away, according to the lawsuit, allegedly threw away a woman's walker. Surely you would know that taking away someone's mobility device is a problem. Why can they not have a storage area where they put a sign up and say, if you're looking for your stuff, you know, come claim it, here it is, you know?
Exactly. And the city of San Diego, to its credit, did that when it got sued for this kind of action several years ago. Mm-hmm. They reached a settlement and agreed to set up some storage facilities where people could put their stuff safely. And then even if they had to sleep somewhere, all they had was one small backpack and they could get up and get out and keep it neat and orderly and tidy. And if they did confiscate stuff, the city posted a thing and said, if you want it, here's where you can call. Call
it. So you don't lose your family photos.
You don't lose your family heirlooms. The one lady, she said, can I please get my walker? You want me to leave, but I can't move without the walker. And they laughed and threw it in the back of the trash truck and ground it to
a... The cruelty of this is really troubling. You know, you wonder if some, beyond financial compensation or changing the procedures for the future, if there should be some, you know, heads roll, figuratively speaking, maybe some jobs lost. You know, there was another incident you described of a woman who asked to use the porta potty and they refused and she wound up urinating on herself. Just the indignity of it. How difficult would it have been to show the simple human kindness of letting somebody use the bathroom?
And that's what helps resolve the problem, is what the head of the original homeless outreach team, Rick Schnell in San Diego, said. Mm-hmm. The best way to take the first steps to start solving the problem, not just chasing people away, is to build trust. Instead of us showing up and being a threat, we show up and can talk to them and they know we're there to try to help them, not to throw away their stuff and laugh at you and make you pee on yourself because I won't let you use the bathroom and you've got to be out in 10 minutes.
Outrageous.
The East County seems to have totally rejected that, with the so-called outreach people just laugh at them.
Now, I do need to ask, I noticed that the cities of La Mesa and El Cajon were not included in this suit. I wonder, does that mean that's because this kind of thing, hopefully, is not going on there under their police forces? Or is it that you just didn't look at it, you just focused on the things that you heard about happening in Santee and Lakeside?
It's mostly the latter. I don't think La Mesa and El Cajon are doing it this way. I haven't looked into what they're doing. You know, I need to get a client and have them talk to me.
Alcohol does do sweeps. I know that they do them, but they do say everyone is offered a place to stay first. The police have actually posted video of themselves going out, not during a sweep, but going out in general. They go around regularly, they talk to them, they know all their homeless by name. They'll make sure they all know, where they can get help. Do they need to get into a rehab program? That sort of thing. So they're at least making some
That's
effort to
working on
treat
the
them like
build
human
trust
beings. Yeah, they know
efforts.
them on a first name
Yes.
basis,
Yes. And these two areas, Lakeside, Santee, those people there have just apparently said to hell with that.
Yeah, it's
Get them
awful.
out, make it miserable so they leave. And as the mayor of Santee said, go somewhere else, which I'm sure doesn't make La Mesa or El Cajon happy.
Now, is that the current mayor, John Minto? We should be clear.
Yes.
Okay, because I know he's not the first. I've heard that when Randy Vopel was there, I had multiple people tell me that the city used to just sort of quietly tell the sheriff to pick up the homeless people and drop them in El Cajon because El Cajon had services for them and Santee did not want to provide it. So it's nothing new, unfortunately. Unlike, say, La Mesa, where they have a task force now, I forget what they call it, but basically a homeless outreach team. So the police are not the first one called every time there's a homeless incident, unless public safety is being threatened. They'll dispatch, one of these other people to go out and try to get the person the help that they need, whether it's mental health services or a place to stay,
And
sort of thing. So
that
Santee
is a
does,
better step forward.
yeah, Santee does seem to be kind of the outlier in terms of not doing anything. The county has set up a safe sleeping place for those with vehicles, in the unincorporated area near El Cajon, but they still have no shelter where if you don't even have a vehicle, there's no place for you to go still, in the county.
Well, it's interesting with the county because, again, the county's kind of over everything, especially out there in this area that we're talking about. But the county has a statutory mandate, Welfare and Institutions Code 17,000, which says it's a county that has the obligation to care, essentially, I'm paraphrasing, but care for the poorest of the poor. You have to provide these basic things, and counties do that. They provide stipends and food help and things like that. But by supporting these goals of Lakeside and Santee, they're undermining. The county is allowing its own work to be undermined. Effectively, the county is supposed to provide things, but they're taking them away.
The public has a role here too. I will say to his credit that Supervisor Joel Anderson has tried to get homeless shelters of various types built. And what he's run into is massive pushback from the public. The supervisors had actually approved building some sleeping cabins for the homeless,
Tiny
150
homes,
of them in Spring Valley. And that just got canceled because of so much community objection. It was apparently too near parks and schools for the public's taste. And so the chair of the supervisors, Nora Vargas, announced last week that that's being scrapped. I think there's still a proposal pending for homeless RV parking in Lakeside. But again, if you don't have an RV, it doesn't help you. So they're
Exactly.
not just doing what seems like is needed to build a shelter. And even the shelter in El Cajon, while it helps a lot of people, we hear some people who don't want to go there because after the first 30 days, well, actually, anybody can go there for 30 days, but you do have to agree to become clean and sober. Some don't want to do that. Even for those who do, after the first 30 days, if you want, the job training and the really intensive help, you have to basically accept Jesus or be willing to listen to Christian preaching. And so, we have a lot of people who may be Muslim or Jewish or atheist or Buddhist or even a Christian sect that's not evangelical, and that's
They
not
shouldn't have, they shouldn't be forced to do that to get some of the help they need, but it is
It
better than
does help a lot
nothing
of people. I mean, I've had a
some
lot of people
people.
tell me their lives were turned around by staying there. So I think they're doing very good work. But I've always asked, why can't we replicate that and come up with a non-denominational, secular version of it where you can get all the same training, no matter what your religion might be, or no religion at all, I suppose.
Right. Nailed it. Yeah.
What are you asking for in the lawsuit?
Here's what we want initially is I hope that these entities will agree to sit down with us in a neutral setting. Everything's on the table. Let's talk and see if we can work to resolve some of these problems so that a lawsuit doesn't have to go forward. A lawsuit isn't ultimately, it can help a group of people, but it's never the best way to solve things that can be solved by.
Yeah, I mean, it can take years talking. In the court, even if you win, before you get a resolution.
Yeah, and it costs money to fight it, mm-hmm. and money's expended, and then you simply end up having to do what you should have been doing. Let's spend the money on that now, and maybe we can work something out that other cities around the county have done already and have made work.
Yeah.
The city of San Diego made the storage facilities work. They've created some spaces, and say what you will about them, at least there are safe places for people to be.
Right.
There needs to be day centers where people can go and get their mail and really work on, you know, replacing their driver's license or doing that kind of stuff.
And correct.
So far, a lot of it's not perfect, but some of it is certainly good and better than nothing.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
So give them a place to be. They're human beings.
Yeah, and finding out, I think, the reasons why people. I know that's one thing El Cajon has done. And they, for instance, they found out some people didn't want to go into a shelter because they couldn't bring their dog with them. You know, would you want to give up your dog?
Or their partner. You have to give up your wife or girlfriend or your kid.
Or gay couples, they can't go in together, you know, for
yes.
some of these. So yeah, maybe addressing it on a point-by-point basis. But I'm curious, Scott, have you had any responses yet from the cities, the county, or the state agencies that you filed a suit against?
Not yet. I'm not faulting them for that. It's a legal thing. It takes a little bit of time. We're in the process of, you know, getting it what's called formally served, which is the formal delivery of the thing.
Oh, I see. Okay, so they
have know about it. And sometimes I know in with past cases with the county and the city of San Diego, for example, they've been great about reaching out and talking and let's see if we can deal with stuff. So I do hold out the hope that we can. And I think the judges in federal court, they have a thing called early neutral evaluation, which mm-hmm. basically says before we start fighting, everybody's got to sit down and talk this out and see if we can do anything to deal with the issues raised. Mm-hmm. And so that will happen. That'll be one of the first things that happens.
Very good point. So if you were the mayor of Santee or the head of the supervisors or the sheriff or in charge of these state agencies, what are the top several items that you would do to make this situation better and never again have a homeless person on your watch, have their walker, their relative's ashes just thrown away?
Well, first of all, like in the city of San Diego, there's certain rules for what you can do if you are doing a sweep like that.
Mm-hmm.
You have to post proper, plenty of good notice.
Maybe in multiple languages, perhaps in English and Arabic and Spanish, if you're in East County.
Excellent. Excellent idea. And that's exactly what in San Diego they do in English and Spanish sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Just and they give proper notice. And the hot team would go first and say, hey, you know, there's a sweep coming. What can we do? That should certainly be something. And the second would be rules for what you do when you go into a sweep and take stuff. You can't just say, oh, everything's dirty, I'm throwing it all away. That's right. Not how it can work.
No.
You need to, what clearly may have value to these people has got to be sorted and taken and mm-hmm. made available reasonably for collection. That's the basic stuff that should be done. The secondary thing is, look, you can't just sweep people away with nowhere to go. That's wrong. That's illegal, not only under federal law, but under state constitutional law as well.
Mm-hmm.
Why not give them a place? They're people. They grew up and lived in those areas. They're not just moving there from somewhere else because mm-hmm. it's, you know, nice weather. They're fellow citizens, and a lot of them could use the help. You know, not all our clients aren't just out there running around crazy, yelling and stabbing things. These are regular people. Living on the street does cause mental anguish and hampers, but give them places to go and be in a day center, at least, if you don't want them hanging around there. Set up a day center where they can go and be and work at a table.
Interesting idea. Yeah.
Very. Yeah. San Diego has won the Neil Good Day Center, and they refuse to do any more, which is very saddening to me. Because people there can get mail and you can outreach to them. And it's a safe place where they can just relax and not have to be worried about being arrested.
Well, yeah. And I mean, even for those who may be capable of working to get a job, you know, you're not going to get hired if you go in smelling dirty and disheveled clothing. So having a place where you can shower,
get a shower,
launder,
water,
maybe get
messages. It's a phone number. It's a P.O. box. And that's exactly right. And why not do that? We have the obligation to care for them anyway. That's a much better way than sending dozens of people in to to throw stuff away and shout and scream and risk civil liability of the city for that.
Agreed. Maybe have a kennel, you know, a shelter that has a kennel. So if people have dogs, they can have their dog nearby at least.
Mm-hmm.
Rehab services for those that may have a drug or alcohol abuse issue, mental health counseling, so many other things that are, you know, so many of them need is so important. For people who want to learn more about this, is there a website for Hope for the Homeless Lakeside or someplace they can go to learn more?
There is not one set up yet, but I think we're working on that. And so I'll give that a push and do that so that people can look up and see what's going on.
Well, when we have that, we'll add it into our article, which you can find the article about the lawsuit on eastcountymagazine.org. It's in our news section and also our Santee section, since Santee is included in the suit. Scott, I'm going to let you have the last word here today. For those who just tuned in, we've been speaking with Scott Dreyer, who is an attorney representing Hope for the Homeless Lakeside and 16 homeless people, plaintiffs, in a lawsuit filed against the cities of San Diego, Santee, the County of San Diego, Caltrans, and the California Highway Patrol over alleged mistreatment of homeless people. Scott, what else would you like people to know about this very important issue?
I think the most important thing to remember is that these are people too. And we are all part of a city and a community and a county. And treatment of people is all being done in all our names. And let's do it right and treat them as citizens and people, not as things to be swept away and not looked at.
Yeah.
One of the things we cited in our introductory part of the lawsuit was an essay in the, I believe it was the New York Times, Kate Cohen. I loved one of her last lines was, "Could it be that the real reason I pretended to ignore a man in need was because I was trying desperately not to see him as a human being for whom I was responsible?" And she came to that realization walking along and avoiding talking and talking with a homeless person. And she realized he's one of us, and there, but for the grace of God, you know, could go any of us.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of them are veterans. A lot of them are seniors. A disturbing, we're going to be doing another interview all about that later this week.
More and more. Yeah.
But yeah, baby boomers are aging, and, you know, not all of them have a home anymore, unfortunately. Well, Scott, I really want to thank you for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you very much, Miriam. I do really appreciate you opening up and chatting with us and letting us talk. That was really awesome. You and East County Magazine, thank you.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the Network for Social Justice.
After an outcry by rural residents and Supervisor Joel Anderson, the City of San Diego has revised its budget to eliminate proposed temporary closures of the reservoir at El Capitan in Lakeside, Lake Sutherland in Ramona, and Lake Hodges in Escondido. Though located in the county unincorporated areas, the reservoirs are owned by the City of San Diego. Over 750 constituents signed a letter sent by Anderson to San Diego Mayor Todd Gloria, opposing the city's proposal to cut $59,000 from the budget for the City Lakes Recreation Program. The county chief administrative officer recommended funding to cover the gap. The city's proposal called for an additional month of closure at the El Capitan and Hodges reservoirs, as well as closure of Sutherland Reservoir an additional day each week. Anderson posted on the Friends of San Diego Lakes Facebook page, "I'm happy to announce that our joint efforts secured the funding needed for this budget shortfall from county resources. Because of your quick action and advocacy, your voice was heard. Thank you." He adds, "Your engagement and support have made a significant impact, ensuring that our many lakes and reservoirs remain accessible for our entire community. This collective achievement demonstrates the power of our unified voice and reinforces our commitment to protecting public access for public recreation." The county's revised operational plan includes several other changes, including more money for drowning prevention, county fire, emergency responses, the Calavo Park Project, free transportation for seniors, the Workplace Justice Fund, and a pilot archery project for county parks. Those increased expenditures are planned after a net increase of $3.7 million in revenues was announced. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Many factors can cause a fire. As temperatures begin to climb and vegetation dries out, the risk of wildfire is all too real to rural San Diegans. On June 19th, a brush fire broke out along Hamishaw Boulevard and Campo Road near Rancho San Diego, burning in medium to heavy fuels with a moderate rate of spread. Air resources from the Ramona Air Attack Base and a sheriff's helicopter were dispatched, but they could not do water drops where the fire was burning under power lines, so ground crews from San Miguel Fire Department and CAL FIRE battled flames burning near homes, a church, and a shopping center. Fortunately, these crews were able to hold the fire to under 2 acres. After the fire was out, a melted blue blob on the ground caught the attention of CAL FIRE's investigators. Directly above, another melted Mylar balloon clung to a high-voltage power line. It appears that these Mylar balloons landed on the power lines, causing arcing that started the fire. According to the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, power lines and human activities are the two top causes of wildfires in California and are responsible for some of the most destructive fires in our state's history. According to SDG&E's website, you may be surprised to learn that metallic Mylar balloons have caused over 520 costly outages and 18 dangerous fire ignitions in the last 5 years in our region alone. These were preventable fires. As we head into another fire season here in San Diego, it's up to each one of us to do our part to prevent fires. Make sure trees and debris are properly cleared from power lines, create defensible space around your home, and be sure trash like glass bottles, cigarettes, and Mylar balloons make their way to the proper receptacle. Keep Mylar balloons inside or securely anchored when you have a party, and never release Mylar balloons into the sky since you don't know where they may come down. When discarding these metallic balloons, poke holes in them to prevent stray balloons from taking flight. With a little vigilance and an ounce of prevention, we can all help make San Diego a little bit safer. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Rabbit hemorrhagic disease has been confirmed in 3 wild cottontail rabbits in Jamul and Dulcura in May, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife confirms. The disease, a form of viral hepatitis, is fatal 50 to 100% of the time in wild rabbits and hares, but does not affect humans, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The testing came after East County Magazine reached out to state wildlife officials in April, after several residents reported finding dead rabbits in these rural areas, but none had been tested. After our inquiry, state officials acquired several carcasses for testing. Connie Kirkpatrick, the resident who alerted our media outlet, told us at the time, "Everybody has been finding dead rabbits, from Jamul all the way up to the mountain areas," prompting our investigative report published in April. This week, Dina Clifford, senior wildlife veterinarian with California Fish and Wildlife, confirmed in an email to East County Magazine that 2 desert cottontail rabbits from Jamul and 1 from Dulcura all tested positive for rabbit hemorrhagic disease virus 2, or RHDV2. Clifford explained that San Diego County Vector Control first tested 2 of the rabbits for tularemia, a zoonotic disease transmissible to other species, including people. "We wanted to be sure that the cases weren't a result of that disease first," she said. "When those tests came back negative," Clifford adds, "we submitted for RHDV2 PCR testing with positive results. More cases are suspected." Clifford says, "We have still been receiving some reports in the East County area. Test results are pending on a cottontail rabbit from Dulcura. Retesting of both cottontails and jackrabbits in the area are also planned." Rabbit hemorrhagic disease was first found in San Diego County in 2020. In 2021, 11 more cases were found, including black-tailed jackrabbits and desert cottontails. In Santee, Rancho Jamul Ecological Reserve, Borrego Springs, Lakeside, Alpine, Ramona, and Campo. No cases were found locally in 2022 or 2023, though only 10 were tested. But this year, as of April, the state received 21 reports of dead rabbits and tested 4, all negative, before the positive test results in Jamul and Dosura. Clifford says the department is working with a conservation team to protect our state's most endangered rabbit, the riparian brush rabbit, with vaccinations and other steps. Vaccinations are only implemented for highly endangered populations because they are time and labor intensive. To protect domestic rabbits, owners should prevent contact with wild rabbits, keep rabbits indoors, avoid feeding hay grown or stored outdoors in areas where wild rabbits are affected, and use biosecurity measures to prevent spreading the virus. Testing of dead rabbits should be done within 48 hours. You can report a dead rabbit by calling 916-358-2790. Putting ice on the carcass while wearing protective gloves can help preserve it for testing. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. In celebration of Independence Day, there are many 4th of July festivities in San Diego's East County to choose from, including the Lake Murray Fireworks and Music Fest, El Cajon's Fireworks and Family Fun Activities, a family picnic and fireworks in Ramona, Santee Salutes with carnival games, music and fireworks, parades in Julian, Dearhorn Valley, and Poway's old-fashioned 4th of July celebration, complete with vintage train rides, and more. So here's the lineup of fun-filled, family-friendly July 4th activities in East County. The Lake Murray Music Fest and Fireworks Show is an annual event put on by a group of active volunteers and community members featuring food, fun, bands, and fireworks. Sadly, organizers say rising costs and permit issues will likely make this the last fireworks show ever, and they're promising to go out with a big boom. The Music Fest is held at Lake Murray Community Park in San Carlos from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. The 9 p.m. fireworks can be seen throughout the Navajo community, from La Mesa to Del Cerro and beyond. You can find details or donate to help cover their costs at lakemurrayfireworks.org. The City of El Cajon will host fireworks on July 4th at 9 p.m. at Kennedy Park. Other activities will be offered, including train rides from 2 to 7 p.m., arts and crafts and family games from 3 to 7, two live bands from 3 to 9 p.m., and then fireworks at 9. The 11th Annual Dearhorn Valley Independence Day Parade and Picnic from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. July 4th offers small-town fun at its finest. People are invited to bring your tractor, trailer, dogs, horses, llamas, alpacas, bicycles, pigs, chickens, wagons, golf carts, walkers, marching boots, drums, marching music, noisemakers, and your own 2 feet. The parade staging is at 9:30 a.m. at McNeil's Field at Dearhorn Valley Road and Lower Elena Lane. The parade starts at 10 a.m. and goes north along Elena Lane, then east along Elena Lane to McKinley's Field. You can also purchase meal tickets for hot dogs, plus all the fixin', and there will be a raffle. On the 4th of July, Julian honors our nation's birthday with a salute to the men and women who made our country great. For more than 20 years, Julian residents, friends, and parade lovers from all over have lined up on the town's main street to wave their flags, cheer marching bands, salute a Marine Corps color guard, and carry a giant American flag down this thoroughfare. At noon, enjoy watching a flyover of vintage airplanes and the national anthem will be played. The parade starts as soon as the anthem is completed, and the enormous American flag has been carried by the audience down Main Street. Those who want to participate carrying the flag should meet at the corner of C and Main Streets. The parade, which runs along Main, is quite popular, so it's suggested you arrive early to catch pre-parade activities that start at 9:30 a.m. You can get details at julianparade.com. Crest's 78th Annual July 4th event will not feature a parade, but will still have music, vendors, food, and a super raffle and auction at Nancy Jane Park and the Crest Community Clubhouse from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Thursday, July 4th. The Ramona Chamber of Commerce, Ramona Rotary Club, and Kiwanis Club of Ramona are proud to bring back the annual 4th of July fireworks show. Grounds open at 4 p.m. at Olive Pierce Middle School in Ramona. There will be food vendors, music, games, and from 9 p.m. to 9:15, fireworks set to the official soundtrack on Star 94.1 FM. Bring blankets and lawn chairs to picnic on the lawn. For details, you can visit ramonachamber.com/fireworks. Bring your family and friends to Old Poway Park and celebrate our country's independence turn of the 20th century style. The celebration runs July 4th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Old Poway Park. The event will feature patriotic entertainment, children's crafts, train displays, and old-fashioned games. Train rides and tasty treats will be available for a fee. Shuttles are available starting July 4th at 9:30 a.m. from Poway Adult School and Poway City Hall. For more information, you can visit poway.org/calendar. Enjoy two spectacular fireworks shows lighting up the sky over the Poway High School Stadium and Sportsplex at 9 p.m. Gates at Poway High School open at 6 for games, activities, and a DJ spinning tunes. Fireworks will also be set off over the Poway Sportsplex. For more information, visit poway.org and click on calendar. Celebrate Santee Salutes on July 4th at Santee Town Center Community Park East, featuring live music, food trucks, carnival rides, family fun, and spectacular fireworks. Enjoy a prestigious U.S. Marine Corps band, a moving patriotic ceremony, and dance the night away to a modern country music band. There will also be food trucks, options to purchase glow sticks or light-up necklaces, and more. End the night with a dazzling display of fireworks lighting up the sky and hearts with patriotic fervor. For full details, you can visit the City of Santee's website. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County. As temperatures soar, the county has opened cool zones at locations such as libraries, but many of these do not accept pets. Fortunately, leashed pets of all breeds, shapes, and sizes are welcome at Petco pet care centers nationwide. Water is provided in disposable bowls, which helps limit the risk of disease transmission. Petco is sharing veterinarian-approved tips to help keep your furry friends safe and cool during this time and throughout the summer. First, prioritize hydration. Pets should always have access to fresh, clean, and safe water. In addition to fresh drinking water, pets can also access shade in Petco locations, as just a few minutes of direct sunlight in extreme temperatures can risk heat exhaustion. Signs of overheating and dehydration in pets include panting, drooling, deep or rapid breathing, weakness, disorientation, and vomiting. If pets start to exhibit any of these symptoms, move them to a cool, shaded area immediately, give them fresh water, and contact a veterinarian if symptoms worsen. Just as children should not be left in a car unattended, pet parents should never leave pets in a car in the heat, since temperatures can skyrocket in a matter of minutes. Also, adjust your walking routine. Prioritize cooler times of day for walks, and remember that sidewalks can get hot for pets' paw pads. Seek cooler surfaces like dirt or grass to help keep pets comfortable. If you can't comfortably place your hand on the ground for at least 7 seconds, then it's too hot for dogs' paws. Stock up on summer essentials. Invest in a pair of booties for extra protection. To prevent your pets from getting a sunburn, avoid excessive sun exposure and apply a pet-safe sunscreen to their ears, nose, and anywhere else they have bare skin or thin fur, Petco advises. Keep up with regular grooming to help pups stay cool in warm weather. This is especially important for dogs with long or thick coats. And finally, if you go hiking during the heat, consider leaving your pet at home, since many pets have suffered heat exhaustion or even died on local trails during hot weather. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is John Tidwell with a Crime Beat report. A man accused of ramming his vehicle into a tent occupied by a homeless man in El Cajon, then fleeing from police and ramming a police vehicle into a concrete barrier, has been arrested. Gabriel Quijas, 48, of Spring Valley, is charged with assault with a deadly weapon on peace officers and evading arrest with wanton disregard for safety. Early on the morning of June 24th, at Prescott Promenade in downtown El Cajon, police officers learned that the day before, Quijas deliberately drove his vehicle into a tent occupied by a male homeless individual, following threats made to the victim, according to El Cajon Police Lieutenant Will Guerin. While officers were gathering statements, Quijas drove by the area in a Cadillac Escalade. Witnesses positively identified him as the suspect. Officers attempted to initiate a traffic stop, but Quijas fled, prompting a pursuit, says Lieutenant Guerin. The pursuit led into westbound Interstate 8, where Quijas allegedly drove recklessly at high speeds. Then he abruptly stopped, nearly causing a collision with a pursuing police vehicle. Guerin says the suspect next tried to ram the police vehicle and force it into the freeway's concrete center divide barrier. Despite efforts by law enforcement to apprehend him, Quijas continued to evade officers, eventually exiting the freeway toward downtown San Diego. He brought his vehicle to a stop in front of the San Diego Police Headquarters on Broadway and exited his vehicle. According to El Cajon Police, Quijas continued to disregard lawful commands from police officers, resulting in the use of a police canine to assist in the suspect's arrest.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is John Tidwell with a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. The Registrar of Voters is seeking temporary site managers to operate in-person voting locations for the November presidential general election. Site managers earn $20 an hour. Site managers will be required to lead poll workers while representing the Registrar of Voters in a professional, nonpartisan manner. The Registrar is seeking people who are team players, exhibit strong leadership skills, and display flexibility, patience, and the highest level of integrity at all times. Previous management and/or poll worker experience is desired. Site managers must attend 2 days of paid poll worker training and 1 additional day of paid site manager training to learn procedures, tasks, and responsibilities. Vote center assignments range from 4 to 11 days managing operations and assisting voters, in addition to 1 day to set up the voter center and 1 day to pack up after election day. Site managers must be available to work from 7:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. on assigned work days, as well as weekends during in-person voting. On election day, November 5th, site managers will work extended hours. English speakers who are bilingual in Spanish, Filipino, Vietnamese, Chinese, Arabic, Japanese, Korean, Laotian, Persian, or Somali are needed. If you are fluent in one of these languages, be sure to indicate it on your application. Site manager applications are available at sdvote.com. For more information, you can call 858-565-5800.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine Radio Show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine Radio Show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests.
This is John Tidwell with a public service announcement from San Diego County Library. Do you or your children like to read, learn, and earn prizes? This summer, you can do all three. The County Library Summer Learning Challenge is back. This summer's challenge runs now through August 31st. Register online or at any of the 33 county libraries, read some books, have some fun, engage in some new activities, and you could just earn a prize, from achievement badges to a new book or your choice of a library tote bag. The Summer Challenge is open to people of all ages, but its main goal is to encourage kids and teens to read during their summer vacations. That can help prevent what some educators call the summer slide, where students can lose some of what they achieved during the school year. Taking part is easy. Just come into your local library to register or do it online. First, pick up a printed learning log in any of the 8 languages at a county library branch, or print one out at home to track your progress. Then, over the 3-month challenge, track what you read and mark the activities you complete in the log to win prizes. Activities can include answering questions, submitting a drawing, or trying out a new recipe. You can win achievement badges by completing educational activities, reading books, spending hours reading, submitting book reviews, or a combination of those. You don't even have to come into the library to check out books or read, since the county's e-book collection is available to everyone using your library card through the library's online OverDrive platform or by downloading the Libby app and connecting to the library. If you don't already have a county library card, you can do that online or at a branch just by using your cell phone number. To sign up for the Summer Learning Challenge, drop into any county library branch or visit the San Diego County Library site, sdcl.org/summer.
El Cajon police are seeking help to identify a man estimated at 50 to 60 years old who was struck and killed by a white Toyota Tacoma the night of June 27th. Police officers and paramedics responded to a call reporting the pedestrian struck by a vehicle on Chase Avenue around 10:52 p.m. First responders determined that the unidentified pedestrian had died at the scene. The driver of the 2020 white Toyota Tacoma that struck the victim did remain on scene and has been fully cooperative with the investigation, says Lieutenant Darren Forster, who adds at this point in the investigation, alcohol or drugs are not suspected to be a factor. The El Cajon Police Department is asking anybody with information about this collision or the identity of the victim to please call 619-579-3311. And they remind those who walk at night to please obey all traffic control devices, only cross the street as designated at controlled intersections, and wear bright or light-colored clothing for visibility. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Ed Barreno with East County Magazine on KNSJ with some grilling safety tips. July, August, and right into Labor Day, we use our barbecue grills more than any other months. Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna, East County Magazine's in-house fire chief and columnist, says that firefighters respond to many structure and wild land fires that involve barbecues around this time of year. He adds, quote, "We also treat many victims for injuries related to barbecues. Barbecue safety means sending the right smoke signal, and that signal is safety," unquote. While gas grills contribute to a higher number of home fires than their charcoal counterparts, all grills pose a risk for fires and burns. Grills should be placed well away from the home and decks, far from under the eaves or overhanging branches and vegetation. Other grilling safety tips from the National Fire Protection Association are as follows. 1. Propane and charcoal grills should only be used outdoors. 2. Keep children and pets at least 3 feet away from the grilling area. 3. Keep your grill clean by removing grease or fat buildup from the grills and in trays below the grill. 4. Never leave your grill unattended. Always make sure your gas grill lid is open before igniting it. 5. If you smell gas while cooking, immediately get away from the grill and call the fire department. Do not move the grill. If the flame goes out, turn the grill and gas off and wait at least 15 minutes before relighting it. 6. When using a starter fluid, use only charcoal starter fluid. Never add any other flammable liquids to the fire. Keep charcoal fluid out of the reach of children and away from heat sources. When you are finished grilling, let the coals completely cool before disposing of them in a metal container. And finally, use common sense and grill safely.
With summer just around the corner, the County of San Diego has opened its annual Cool Zones program, giving people free, safe, air-conditioned sanctuaries to escape extreme heat. The county created the Cool Zone program 2 decades ago to give older adults, people with disabilities, and those with health concerns that could be complicated by effects of extreme heat. The program will run from June 1st through October 31st. Sites include the county's 33 branch libraries, community centers, and other locations across the county, including here in East County. A complete list of Cool Zone sites, hours, and locations is located online at coolzones.org. That site includes a map where you can type in your address and find locations near you.
You can also call 211 to find a location. Or if you can't get to a cool zone, you can even ask for help with free transportation. Extreme heat can be very dangerous for older adults and children especially, and everybody is recommended to shelter in cool locations when the temperature gets too hot. Working or exercising outside on a hot day, or staying in a hot space too long can cause heat-related illnesses from cramps to exhaustion to heat stroke, a condition when the body can no longer control its own temperature. Signs of heat stroke or exhaustion include having an extremely high body temperature, 103 degrees or higher, dizziness, nausea, confusion, and headache. Anybody suffering those symptoms should call 911 and be cooled off immediately. Now, in addition to providing cool zone locations, the county, working with San Diego Gas and Electric, is now providing free electric fans to older or disabled San Diegans living on limited incomes. To be eligible for the fan program, county residents must be 60 years or older, or disabled, living on a limited income, must not have access to an air-conditioned space at their home or apartment building, and be unable to travel to a cool zone site. To learn more about the Cool Zone Fan Program or to request a fan, you can call 211 or visit coolzones.org. The Cool Zone Program is operated by the County Health and Human Services Agency. For more information about the Cool Zones Program, as well as tips to stay cool at home and locations near you, again, that website is coolzones.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
This is John Tidwell with a Tribal Beat report. San Diego State University and Kumeyaay Community College have signed a partnership agreement to recruit and admit college transfer students in an effort to drive increased enrollment and degree attainment for local Native American students. The agreement guarantees admission to qualifying students transferring from Kumeyaay Community College, a public community college on the Sikwan Band of Kumeyaay Nation Reservation. SDSU President Adela De La Torre says this will ultimately result in more Native students pursuing higher education and earning four-year degrees. She adds, Native and Indigenous communities have faced historical injustices, forced assimilation, and the suppression of their cultures and languages. As institutions of higher learning, it is our duty to proactively work towards a different paradigm, one of access, one of healing, equity, and ultimately self-empowerment, De La Torre said. Joining De La Torre in a signing ceremony in May were Kumeyaay Community College President Stanley Rodriguez and Sikwan Councilman Jamie LeBrake, as well as other tribal and education leaders. LeBrake said, "When I work with our children and our youth, there is a whole pool of wealth out there. These are intelligent and bright kids, and what we are doing is hopefully the beginning of more opportunities to come." He noted, "Everything we are doing is a bright light to our people and adds to the light that came from others before us," adding that the agreement shows that the university is committing to lighting the spirit of our people and we are working together to keep it. Under the agreement, SDSU will offer guaranteed admission to Kumeyaay Community College students who have earned a cumulative 2.5 grade point average in qualified transferable units. In addition to the minimum GPA, students must meet prerequisite requirements for their selected major. The goal is to have the first cohort of transfer students enrolled in fall 2025. SDSU, which is located on Kumeyaay historical land, will also create new courses on Kumeyaay language, history, and culture to be housed in the Department of American Indian Studies. Kumeyaay Community College will provide support and preparation to students to prepare for transfer during their junior year. The college will also work with students to develop their individual education plans and to recruit qualified students. In addition to the long-standing Department of American Indian Studies, SDSU in recent years has expanded programs and initiatives dedicated to increasing support for Native and Indigenous students and other community members, including a Native Resource Center, student groups such as the Native American Student Alliance, and SDSU Hauka Week to welcome Native students and their families. David Camper, professor and major advisor of the Department of American Indian Studies, says, supporting Native and Indigenous students promotes educational equity by addressing systemic barriers to access and success. He concludes, we are very grateful for this opportunity to work collaboratively to redress these systemic and structural barriers, and I am proud of this partnership and the way it will serve Native, particularly Kumeyaay, students.
The San Diego County Sheriff's Child Abuse Unit is investigating the death of a 2-month-old baby in Santee who was left in a hot car. A family member called 911 after finding the baby girl unresponsive inside an SUV that had been parked outside the house for several hours on June 13th on Settle Road. Deputies with the Santee Sheriff's Station and paramedics with the Santee Fire Department rushed to provide life-saving measures to the infant. She was taken to Sharp Grossmont Hospital, where she later died. Anyone with information is asked to call the Sheriff's Child Abuse Unit at 858-285-6222. Summer months means warmer weather and potentially dangerous temperatures. It only takes minutes for the temperatures inside your car to heat up like an oven. It is illegal to leave your child alone in a car. It's also illegal to leave your child alone in a car when the engine is running or the key is in the ignition. Never leave your child alone in a car or other vehicle, even for a second, to dash into a store or run a quick errand. Caitlin's Law is named after a 6-month-old baby who died in 2000 after being left in a hot car for more than 2 hours by her babysitter in Riverside County. A reminder for parents, guardians, babysitters, and caregivers. Where's baby? Look before you lock. Summer routines can change unexpectedly. Even the best parents can forget a quiet or sleeping child is in the back seat of a car. So remember, once you park, stop, look, and lock. These actions could save a life. Check with your spouse, partner, or caregiver when there's a change in schedules. Ask your child care provider to call if your child doesn't show up for care as expected. Put a purse, briefcase, phone, work badge, and other personal items in the back seat as another reminder to look before you leave. Write a note or place a stuffed animal in the passenger seat to remind you that a child is in the back. A car can look like a playground or a great hiding place for a curious child, so lock your car doors and keep the keys and fobs out of reach to prevent children from getting trapped inside. Teach children that a vehicle is not a play area. If you do see a child alone in a locked car, act immediately and call 911. If the child is in distress, you can take action to get the child out of the car and spray them with cool water. Heat stroke in children can happen quickly as their bodies are small, heat up faster, and are more prone to the effects of extreme temperatures. You can learn more safety tips by visiting wheresbaby.org. The Sheriff's Department offers child car safety classes free. Certified child passenger safety technicians are available at sheriff stations and substations to help you, including in Alpine, Ramona, San Marcos, Valley Center, and Vista. They trained with the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration about the proper installation and inspection of car seats and seat belts. The class also covers preventing heat stroke in a car. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice. This is Miriam Raftery.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County into Scanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.